Addiction never affects just the addict. It affects all of us. Recovering from addiction and alcoholism is also a life-changing battle for families dealing with a loved one's addiction. Numerous programs support addicts as they reclaim their lives, while their families face their own challenges without the same guidance. You're listening to Voices in Courage with K.L. Wells, where we transform the lives of the families and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics from surviving to thriving in the midst of chaos. Tune in as we highlight vulnerable stories of families who have addicted relatives and friends and learn how they have dealt with the challenges of isolation, desperation, and shame. If you are seeking ways to live your best life, then we welcome you into this safe space. Be a part of change today with your host, K.L. Wells.
Well, it's nice to finally meet you in person.
Oh, absolutely. You too, for sure.
Where do you live? Yeah.
I live in Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, how much do you love that place now, the days with the green?
Totally love it.
Great. How long have you been there?
Just, 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So I grew up in the D.C. area and on a cattle ranch in Montana. And then professionally just kind of moved all across the country. And I was up in the Tacoma area before I moved down here and met my wife online and ended up moving down here.
Online? That's so exciting.
Yeah.
How many years have you been together?
10.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. So thank you. Eugene wasn't even on my radar screen. So
is she from Eugene?
Well, she was living here when we met. So she had been in Reno area for a long time and had grown up in different parts of the country too, and so on and so forth. So this is her happy place too.
Great. Glad to hear it.
Yeah. So what did Tucker tell you about what we're doing today?
So I've actually tried to pick his brain quite a bit, and he just said, you're just going to talk. You're going to be interviewed as a podcast and it's going to be recorded. And that's basically all he told me. He didn't tell me what it was going to be used for, if it's practice or if it's something that's going to be placed out in the public. He didn't really tell me too much.
Okay. So the idea of this, since this is the first one, I'm just going to, I'm practicing too. I've been interviewed and I've been on Zoom quite a bit, but I've not quite done this before. But the whole notion about Voices in Courage is to create a community for people like us, who are the family, the loved ones of the addict or alcoholic. And for me, my story is that my son about 5 years ago lost his dad. And 4 years ago, we found out that he just kind of had fallen off a cliff in terms of drug addiction. And so we've been walking that journey for the last 4 years. And for me, I was like, okay, I did the natural things that I knew to do personally to help navigate through this. But at the same time, everything, at least my experience has been that most of the addiction community is focused on the addict. And so, you can go to Al-Anon and some places like that, but it's kind of hit or miss. That has been my experience. And so what are the books that are out there? What are the experts that are out there that are saying, as a family member, how do you navigate this? And how do you navigate it not only for your son or daughter or husband or spouse or siblings or whatever that are addicts or alcoholics, but how do you navigate it for yourself in a healthy way? My journey kind of led me to, I think it's been a little bit more than a year ago, I found the Idea Collective on Facebook and got involved there. And then Tucker was the one who did my ideation call on December 12th of 2019. So that's how he and I met. And through my story, he just towards the end mentioned briefly what his story was. Mm. And so I followed up with him to see if we could have some time to just talk. And that led to a conversation where he was much more available to share his story with me, and which I was very grateful for. And it seemed like, well, this was definitely lined up in a way that would serve both of us. But at that point, I was kind of on a track to do a TED talk. And then COVID took over last year. And I knew that I didn't want to do a TED talk online. I wanted to do it in person. So things happened and I got a hold of a marketing person. And then I reached out to Tucker and said, okay, this is what I'm up to right now is because of COVID, I'm not going to do the TED talk at least for a year. but I want to do something here because we have this vacuum and I feel very called to this work. So we reconnected again, and he's been amazing in getting on at least once a week with Steve Carey, one of my marketing people, and giving counsel and advice. And then, of course, I said, so do you think Jen might be open to having a conversation? Because I haven't necessarily talked to a lot of spouses or really a lot of family members other than my inner circle. So this is kind of the first one of those. So it's very informal from my perspective, and we will work together on what's comfortable for you. But I really would like us to have a real conversation as best as possible. My notion about this is for more and more people like us to be real and raw and vulnerable in our own stories so that it gives people permission to do the same thing for themselves. And they can pick and choose what they can take from our journeys and incorporate them or try them on for their own journeys to help them navigate in a way that hopefully serves in a much more healthy way to navigate.
Right. First of all, I just want to congratulate you and thank you, because what you're starting here, honestly, I have to say to you, is exactly what I needed. From day one, when this whole experience, journey, whatever you want to call it, started, I needed a place where there was support for spouses, family members. Like you said, it's raw and genuine. I think like with Al-Anon, well, I think it serves many purposes. Oftentimes I would go to meetings, and I had been to almost 100 meetings. I'd come back even more depressed because the stories were somebody has died, or people are crying the whole time, or they've gotten divorced. And so I left feeling more empty than I felt going in there. So right. I needed more of a mentorship, raw, real conversation like this than I did listening to a group of people basically unloading and walking away feeling like, oh my gosh, is this what it's going to end up for me? You're going to end up in divorce. Is he going to die? And then the second thing I want to say is that I also appreciate the fact that you said that you want it to be raw and real and authentic and genuine. Because I think that even before, prior to coming on this, I was thinking to myself, do I tell her everything? Do I tell her the real stuff? Because you work with Tucker. This is the first time that Tucker has, I don't want to use the word allowed me, but encouraged me to finally open up. Because as you know, when it first gets started, I mean, I was hushed. I was told, don't tell anybody. I was in isolation with it, really. Because it's not something that you tell people. There's a lot of shame with alcoholism and addiction and all of that. And so it's not something that you go shout out to everybody, I need help, or I'm alone. Or so to your credit, and again, thank you to you. This is something I genuinely believe is necessary. And it's actually something for me as well that I'm actually looking forward to working into my life moving forward as well. So I just want to say thank you to you.
Absolutely. I totally relate to the shame part. I mean, I've done a lot of work in the course of my career because I'm a coach and a consultant. And in order for me to do what I do, I have to be real and authentic and genuine so that people can tell me what's going on in their lives and that we can help them navigate it in a healthy, happy, joyful way while they're still in the midst of the storm. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't deal very much with the shame part of this or the guilt or blaming or anything along those lines because I'd done a lot of work before that. But what I did deal with was, who do I turn to? And who's going to be able to help me navigate this in a really healthy way that fits with who I really am and the work that I've previously done? And I can completely relate to the going to Al-Anon meetings and walking away like, oh my goodness, seriously? Okay, this isn't going to serve. And that's where I found myself. So I started doing what I normally do in terms of reaching out to the people that I trust and that are my tribe and asking them, who do they know, so on and so forth. And then just reading and looking for podcasts, looking for videos, looking for things that would help me figure out this next piece in a really good way. You know, it's a journey. And getting clear about my journey, Sam's journey, just like your journey and Tucker's journey and your kid's journey and so on and so forth is an interesting and daunting sometimes. and terrifying and exhilarating. And it's the full spectrum of
emotions.
Yes, absolutely. So I want to say thank you to having the courage today to get on with me, particularly since you don't know me.
Well, I've actually heard a lot of nice things about you. And I can tell you that I remember the day when you and Tucker first had your connection, when you kind of talked about your son, and he kind of said his story. And then he told me about how it kind of blossomed from there. And he said, wow, I should have done that a long time ago. And now that's basically his platform that he's moving forward on. So there's so much power, and there's so much, I don't know if enlightenment is too strong a word, but there's, once you say your truth, then you find somebody, oh, that's me too, or my friend or my cousin or my brother or whatever. And so how is your son doing now, by the way?
Well, we've been in and out of a lot of rehabs. Currently, right now, he is in residential treatment and doing really well. So it's given him and his girlfriend and her son an opportunity to rebond again in a healthy way. She had kicked him out in the fall, and because he had relapsed and was in a really dark place. And so he doesn't have the thing hanging over him. This had to be his choice at this point. I mean, we've been through drug court and jail and all of it. Mm-hmm. And so what we think really kind of was finally the thing that broke it for him was he was beaten, and it could have ended very poorly. And I think that was his final wake up call.
Well, I'm glad he's okay. That's good news. Yeah. Well, thank you for telling me. I feel very comfortable with you. So if there's any specific questions that you have to ask me, I'm very comfortable to tell you the truth. So if there's any specific that you'd like to know or anything that I can do to help specifically, I'm an open book.
So I'm an amazingly curious person about people anyway. So I do have a series of questions I'd like to ask. And part of it is like, where do you identify kind of your journey beginning? And I want to know your story. And I think that gives people a window in that really matters. I have not heard very many of stories that are ours to tell.
You know, what's funny is that when you say, where did it start? Because I think the moment when you realize that Sam was in trouble or something was happening with Sam, at least for me with Tucker, like I realized, oh, wait, I kind of 5 weeks earlier, oh, there, that was a sign that something was wrong. And then 2 months prior to that, it just continues to go back because you realize now what signs to look for. Yes. But I would say that the beginning of my journey, I would say began as an NFL Sunday, because NFL Sunday was the day that he loved to get drunk, and it would start early and it would progress throughout the day. And I remember it was an NFL Sunday in December. We were sitting at Carl Strauss Brewing across the street from our house with our children, and I could just tell it was going to be one of those days. And so how I would deal with my pain and my fear is I would go running. And so I had basically used that as my escape. So I became an avid runner. I lost so much weight just because I just kept working out, because that was my medicine and escape from the problem. I remember I began my jog, which usually would start at 2 to 3 miles, and then it moved on to 5 miles. And then by the time I got to mile five, I was actually running up a hill, a massive like mountain of a hill. And I could tell that my feet were starting to be in tremendous pain. And I didn't want to call Tucker because I didn't want him to yell at me. So I just kept running. And by mile eight, I was having such severe pain that I was knocked on a coffee shop to try and get some help, because the last person I wanted to call was Tucker, and they were closed. So I continued walking, and eventually my foot pain went from pain to not able to run, to barely able to walk, to mile 11, when I was just a mile from my house, I was practically crawling. I had broken my feet. I ended up breaking both feet in 3 different places, stress fractures, and basically crushed my feet. I ended up in 2 boots and crutches. What I realized now looking back was that was actually a call for help, because I needed someone to physically see that I was in pain, because I wasn't able to verbalize the internal and emotional damage, pain that was occurring inside of me. And so when I got home, I was completely afraid, he's going to yell at me. He's going to yell at me. And that Christmas, I remember a family member saying to me, well, I'm not surprised you broke your feet, because you're a Toolist, and Toolist is my maiden name, and we're known for being clumsy. And that just crushed me. And that just made me even quieter, because no one could even fathom what was going on inside. So I would say that my journey started that day when I broke both my feet, and that actually ended up changing my life forever on that day.
And how long ago was that, Jen?
Tucker's been sober 5 years. So I think that was in about 2014. So about 7 years ago.
Did you realize when that took place, what you were doing in terms of running to help yourself navigate the pain without giving it voice?
I knew that when I began running, that when I continued to keep running and running, that I knew that there was no turning back, that there was going to be something, whether that was me ending up the way that I ended up or me calling my mother for help and telling her the truth. And I just didn't have the courage to tell her yet because I was silenced by Tucker. You're silenced by an alcoholic. You tell no one. And so I had lost basically all my connection to my family and my friends because I was basically in isolation for, I'd say, about a year.
When you broke both feet, what was your next step, so to speak, in terms of taking your own power back?
I ended up joining a mastermind group. It was a 3-day speaking event. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Bo Eason, but it's basically...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a personal power story event. And I didn't feel like I was allowed to tell anyone. Well, I was told I was not allowed to tell anyone. I thought, well, the only way I can really say my truth is by going in a room with 100 people I don't know. Right. We all have to sign this confidentiality agreement that say we're not going to talk about each other. And I was finally able to like unload on 100 people and tell my story. But I never said the information about Tucker. I just owned it about myself because I was still in fear that he was going to be upset with me. So I did that and I ended up getting up on stage like everybody else and recording a 2-minute information about what my story was about. That's how I got started my power back. But I was made fun of. I was made fun of by Tucker. I was made fun of by other people just because what is she doing? The other way I took my power back was I began exercising fervently to a point of too much. I would exercise 4 hours a day because he could take me emotionally and mentally and say all those nasty, horrible things, but I was never going to let him take me physically. He never tried to, but you don't know what's going to happen. So I became so strong that it was never an option that that was going to be a choice.
Right. And so at that point, when you went to Bo Eason's event, what took place after that? I'm super curious, like, what's the journey stepping into having an accident that debilitates you, which is the wake-up call, which is the huge red flag, but still confined by the experience of your story. And then you go to Bo's event, and then what?
He had a Q&A, and I said, I had been training and exercising for about 2 years at that point, and I had wanted to become a coach and a mentor. And I couldn't do it regarding the personal situation that I was in, but I wanted to help people because oftentimes when you go to a gym, 50% of the people are people like us who have families who are part of addiction. And I wanted to become a coach. And so I remember saying to Bo Eason, well, what if I fail? And he said to me, well, what if you succeed? And I think I was more afraid of succeeding than I was of failing. And so I remember the next day I started, was called to do a boot camp for my children's school. I literally just pulled everything out of my butt that I knew and got all this equipment and I ran a boot camp. And then 6 weeks later, I was hired as a job to be a coach at Fitwall in Solana Beach. And I became an assistant coach and was coaching classes weekly and then moved into client relations and then head coach and then eventually manager of the studio. And so the way I gave back to people was every single day showing up to a studio, coaching and mentoring people who were broken in one way or another, whether that's physical, mental, or emotional need for help.
Wow, that's great. That's great. So when did the mindset piece show up for you?
Mindset piece showed up for me when I was by myself and no one else was watching me. And I had to have the fortitude and the perseverance to keep going. Because when you're broken, you know, I remember a day when I was coming out of the shower, I was naked and I was cold and I just fell to the floor and I couldn't get back up. And I remember thinking to myself, I've never been so broken in my entire life. People would always wonder, well, what's wrong with Jen? What's wrong with Jen? Why isn't she talking to anybody? Why isn't she socializing with us anymore? So taking that anger, quite frankly, taking that hurt, taking all the emotions and then empowering it into a physicality for myself to make myself stronger. And then driving into following the, lack of a better word, dream of becoming a coach to mentor people. It was in those silent moments when no one else was watching was when I found the ability to move forward.
One of the beliefs that's kind of helped me through this is the belief that when life is falling apart, it's actually falling together.
Yes, yes, yes. I remember when Tucker was in his first rehab facility and we had to have a one-on-one conversation. His parents were in the room as well. So it was really uncomfortable for me because we had all these people in the room and it's supposed to be one-on-one time and there's everybody watching. And I said to him, we had this perfect hallmark of a family. And what I mean hallmark, I mean, we looked like just a happy-go-lucky family. And I said to him, I said, you took that and you just like shook the puzzle box and it's gone and it's ruined. And I said, and I don't know how we're going to get it back. I had to allow it to break. Like you have to allow the nose to break in order for it to be fixed. And it really wasn't until about 2 years ago that I allowed the nose to break and allow myself and our family and our marriage to put together a whole new picture puzzle. It's not what it was before. It's a totally different picture. And be willing to be open to a new picture that I never thought was going to be.
So what was the thing, the key that unlocked that door 2 years ago?
Honestly, it was not knowing if our marriage is going to make it. That's a very hard thing to say. Tucker basically had to get on medication. And again, without getting on too much of his personal information, they told me in his rehab facility that it takes usually about 7 rehab facilities for someone to accept where they are. Tucker went to 3 or 4, but they told me that when I was in the rehab facility with him, that the person I was married to had died. And that I need to learn to love this new person. And they also told me that his brain was mush, that his brain was 2 years old and that it will take some time for it to develop back correctly. And so it was trying to be patient year after year, going back to work, working till 8 o'clock at night, then doing a rollover shift and waking up at 3:30 to be at a studio by 4:30 in the morning with 2 little children. That constant over and over that I could not ever maintain. It was about a year and a half ago when I had put up with the patience of this brain should be coming back by now. Like we're 5 years into this. What I found was that he would have kind of a Jekyll and Hyde personality, something different with his clients, and then a totally different person outside. And I simply said, I can't be married to somebody who is one way with all these people on the computer and is another way outside the door because probably wants a drink. He's pissed off. He's frustrated. And I'm getting this just constant, awful, angry, unkind person. And I said, if he doesn't get on this medication is just as important as sobriety. And once he got on that medication, and again, it's different for everybody.
Sure.
It's like he came back piece by piece by piece by piece. So that would be the most recent thing with regard to breaking.
Wow. I'm just kind of taking this in. And I've read some pieces, I've seen video, I'm familiar with Dr. Amen's work relative to brain science. And that gave me hope to understand that our brains are so much more capable, the neuroplasticity, mm-hmm. that they can regenerate and heal again. Totally amazing.
I can see it. I genuinely can see it. Absolutely.
So it sounds like you guys are still in that process of discovering who Tucker is. There's still an evolution to this,
yes.
in terms of the journey. So then I'm imagining that along with his own evolution in discovering who he really is and becoming the truest representation of the best version of himself is simultaneously you're in that same space.
Well, we both had to get an individual therapist and be willing to dedicate ourselves to the therapy. We have a marriage therapist. And we had been going to marriage therapy, but we were just spinning. It wasn't until they said, enough is enough, really. Tucker, you go to your therapist and you really work. And Jennifer, you go over here and with the therapist talking about all the trauma and being willing to, I hate to use the word vulnerable because I know people use it all the time, but frankly, just feel like you're naked in front of your therapist and just be like, this is what it is. And I actually said the words, please help me.
And when you said that, please help me, did that feel freeing to you?
Yes, it absolutely did. And because they had told me in his first rehab facility, they said, be careful as the spouse, because oftentimes family members can develop autoimmune diseases from all the stress. And I was like, oh goodness, I can't even imagine that. And that's actually exactly what happened to me. I was working about 50 hours a week. My body basically just started to shut down again. About 2 years ago, I had 2 cancer scares. The first was an ovarian cyst cancer scare because my cysts would burst all the time. I was in constant pain. Then they thought I had breast cancer. My body was just saying, you have been through so much trauma for such an extended period of time. We need you to stop and we need you to figure this out. And I gained weight and then attempting to deal with all of my feelings and all of my memories. And of course, I'm starting to eat and all of that, developing all these bad habits. And so I had to genuinely accept that I needed help too. It wasn't just the alcoholic. I needed help to deal with all the trauma and actually start dealing with what I had been through. Because you can pretend to be super happy and pretty on the outside, but if your inside is broken, then nothing is going to work. Nothing's going to work. And so I've had to basically spend the last year and a half doing my own work and accepting my role in it. And my role meaning when he does get better, not thinking that the person he is now is a person who hurt me 2 years ago. He's a new person. And so it's very easy to fall back into, well, you hurt me 2 years ago, so you're going to hurt me again. Break out of that pattern. I have to do a lot of work with that.
Right. And so those pattern breaks are a huge piece and a component to all of this. And man, that's a great conversation. So I'm going to put a little placeholder on that one. And so I'm thinking about the spiritual journey of this. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for asking that question.
Yes.
I have to genuinely thank you because I lost faith in God. I absolutely lost faith in God. It was terrible because we would go to church on Sundays and we would dress as this beautiful family. And he would navigate amongst the crowd and act as one person and be somebody different. So I stopped going to church because I couldn't stomach being with all of those people. This is one of my favorite parts of my journey, is that my daughter started singing in the chorus at our church. She goes to a private Catholic school. And I went to go see her after I had left my job because my body was basically shutting down and I had to just stop working and take care of myself. And so I remember sitting on the side of the church and looking up at my daughter. And she was just singing as part of the group. She wasn't even in a solo. I just started crying. My daughter had brought me back to church. My daughter had brought me back to God. And she was bringing my faith back. And I remember her friend saying to her, your mom's crying. Your mom's crying. And I just collapsed in that church. And I went back every week, every Friday. I was always there to watch my daughter sing up until COVID, of course. But I told my daughter, I give you credit. And I thank you for bringing my faith back because you're the one who brought me back to God. And I mean it.
And so what went through your heart in terms of the transformation of coming back to God?
Because everybody goes through something. This is what I was given. And so I had felt abandoned by him. And I don't know if I would use the word blame him, but I just didn't understand why he would give me this problem. And so but then as I sat there and I listened to scripture and then I read Jesus Calling every morning, I realized that life is not meant to be a smooth sailing trip from birth until death. And everybody will have something. And this is what God gave me. And he knows that I'm a strong person. He made me, I call myself durable, like an old pair of jeans. He knows that I have a strong fortitude because I grew up playing football with my brother in the backyard football field. He knows I'm tough. He will only give me what I can handle. And so now I understand that. Every morning I wake up and I read a passage of Jesus Calling and I just sit there and I breathe in and I listen to the birds and I breathe in the fresh air and I smell all the smells, whether it's the flowers in the spring or whatever, but I genuinely take whether it's 5 minutes or 15 minutes and I just sit there and say, thank you.
Did you have a gratitude practice prior to all this?
No, because I was just going, right?
Right.
It was just, I was on this treadmill and yeah. So keep going on the treadmill. My brother would always say, Jen, you're not going to be able to maintain this treadmill. And I was like, I'm doing fine on this treadmill. And then lo and behold, nope,
right.
Off that treadmill. I didn't even stop to think. There was no gratitude in my life beforehand.
In some ways, do you think that Tucker's own journey has been your, I guess, gift mm-hmm. to your own journey?
Yes, I absolutely feel that way because as I'm ready to go back as a soon to be 43-year-old mother, of two teenagers who will not need me in a couple of years. They don't need me right now. But what is it that I'm going to do in my next chapter? And I've prayed about it. And I really do feel that my journey, I mean, I've always felt like myself as a mentor and a coach. That's just kind of always what I've done. But now I'm not really going to be mentoring people physically in a studio. I really want to help mentor people through what I've been through because as you said, the word storm, that's exactly what it is. And now I feel like Tucker and I and our children are coming out of the storm. And now it's time for me to give back. And when I told our daughter right before I got on this with you, I said, I'm going to go talk about my journey with what happened with your dad and my experience. And she says, oh, you're going to go do that? Does dad know? Because it's a true testament of the healing that we have now. Because 3 years ago, don't tell anybody. Today, he encouraged me to talk with you and gave me the platform. I mean, what a difference. And absolutely. So what a blessing
absolutely.
To have this opportunity to say my truth and to have someone like you who's authentic, who I could really just feel comfortable telling you what it was like.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to give you a little bit more of a window in, I was married a number of years ago to Sam's dad, who was an alcoholic. I didn't know it until I got married and was a Vietnam vet, suffered from post-traumatic stress. And those things revealed themselves very quickly after we were married. I can completely relate to the kind of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde piece. Steve never got clean and sober. I divorced him after 5 years because I just was not going to live that way. And I was afraid for my life and for Sam's life too. And so years later, I will tell you, Jen, through Sam's journey, we did a whole bunch of work together and I forgave him, which was an extraordinarily powerful moment because I can completely relate to the trauma that you speak to. Mine may look different than yours. But trauma is trauma, and all the incidents that stack up that we find ourselves in, it just builds. And so when I forgave him, I actually physically felt like I was free. And then last year and a half before Steve passed away, he did get clean and sober. I was very grateful to have the opportunity to forgive him mm-hmm. in all of that and to have talked to him like a month before he died. And it was very sweet. Towards the end. So that gave me a window because I'm 64 at this point, gave me a window in into the longevity and the life cycle of relationships that there still is hope. There still is possibility that the person that you know them to be, which is not the alcoholic or the addict, is still there. And if they choose to wrestle with the devil, so to speak, and choose their own life, again, that you can begin to see that person emerge. And it feels to me like that is part of your story. I really appreciate that. And so I think about, what do you wish you'd known years ago that you know now?
I would have spoken up immediately. I would have told my mother, despite the fact that this other person, and again, we'll just call him Jekyll for just instead of the person who tell me you're to tell no one, this is quiet and you tell no one of what I'm doing. I would have spoken up immediately to the people that I trust, of course. And I would pick one or two people, unloaded the truth immediately. The other thing I would have done is completely pictured in my mind two different lanes. This was his lane and this is my lane and stay in my lane. And when he tries to tap on me and knock me down and say all these nasty, horrible words, don't believe him. This is his lane and it's going in a direction that you don't want to go in. But what he's saying at this particular point isn't true. Because I think the other thing is that I believed everything he told me. All those negative things that he said, I call it emotional pounding. Because I really, quite frankly, had just wished he would have just hit me. Because then somebody would have seen the evidence of what it was all. But I think that I would have told someone and then I would have kept to my own lane, meaning that I would have maintained positive self-talk as much as I possibly could. Because I'll be honest with you, I went to a priest and he told me that I have to stay. That was in the middle of the emotional mental abuse. He said, that's your duty. That crushed me. I have two little children who are witnessing all this. They also went to the police and they said there's nothing that they could do unless something physical
happens.
So yep. Those are the first two main things that I would have done is speak up.
Do you view speaking up and telling your mom and maybe a couple close friends as asking for help?
Yes and no. I think that being honest and open is one thing, and then I needed to do that. And then I actually did ask for help, and I was turned away. I actually told a very close family member of ours that had the power to do something. I went up and I said, there's a problem. He is sick. And the person told me, not my problem, and walked away. So I think when I asked for help about a year ago to my therapist and said, please help me, that I think when someone heard me and then took me in and really helped me, because you got to go to the right source for help.
Exactly. And I think that's part of the navigation of this is learning who to ask for help from. I mean, I think a lot of what we're talking about here is a cultural thing, is that we're not trained to ask for help. We're not trained to learn how to figure out how do we trust smartly. How do we pick really great people that we surround ourselves with that will have our back, not have an agenda, and be there for us through kind of the thick and thin? Because I remember when I was going through situations with Steve, I did not tell my friends or family either. And partly because I didn't think that they would help me figure out how to navigate it in my own way. I thought they would give me their advice and there would be judgment that came along with it. Mm-hmm. And I was already going through enough of that as it was. It wasn't until on the other side of it that I did choose a couple people where I was living to talk to, but it wasn't until I was on the other side of it where I shared with my friends and family what had actually been going on. And that was a learning moment for me to get clear about what kind of help I really needed. I didn't need the judgment. I needed somebody to kind of take my hand and walk with me. And then I also needed the help of somebody who had navigated this in a really healthy way or had been far enough down the road to have gotten into a healthy pattern of life and was still able to navigate.
Exactly. And I think also early on, our neighbor next door had stage 4 cancer. Luckily, he survived and he's doing okay. But I remember seeing people would bring dinners to them over and over and over, and they would have the community support. With alcoholism and addiction, I basically raised my children for about a year by myself because he was either, couldn't find him, or in a rehab facility or doing things he wasn't supposed to be doing. And there were times when I needed help making a meal because I was working. There was nobody to bring meals. No one would bring a hot meal because I didn't tell anybody. So I think that there's something, I think that we need to get rid of the stigma of shame, guilt with alcoholism, addiction, or whatever it is. It's a disease. And I think that the other aspect is that when you really absorb that this is a disease, and when we take away the guilt and the shame and all the things that people think about it, myself included, before I went through this with Tucker, I think it would really change the way people view society. And I think that we would be able to help more people because more people would be speaking up.
Absolutely.
When they really need it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the statistics are staggering in terms of the numbers. And the fact that we have 1 in 3 families that are dealing with addiction or alcoholism or any kind of ism, because there's so many isms that our culture has created, not just Western culture, but globally at this point. And we are ill-prepared to figure out how to deal with this in a sane and healthy, thriving way. So in some ways, I think I have the perspective on this as I'm talking this through with you, that it is very much like the chrysalis. We're in this cocoon of the life that we've been born into, and then we're trying to get out, you know, and then we're trying to figure out what out looks really looks like, because we haven't been given a true picture of what life really is.
Right.
We've been sold a bill of goods. And we have these notions that people have got it together when they don't. And the vast majority of adults don't have it together.
Exactly. And I think being willing to pave a new path that you didn't even consider would be a path that you would need or have to walk down. But then also the willingness to think about redirection in terms of whether you need to make a 180 change or a slight turn, or what is it that you need to do, being willing to move from the path that you so thought that I had to go down. We are a family of 4. We are a lovely family. We love each other. And then disaster happens, because it was a disaster, quite frankly, for a very long period of time. There's no other way to describe it. And to have 2 little children there, being willing to make a change and accept it and then have the courage to move forward with whatever that might look like, even if you don't know what it's going to look like.
The truth of the matter is life is an unknown experience. Mm-hmm. We don't know from day to day what's going to show up. And we're very much in that place now. I mean, the speed at which we've created this world that we live in, it just so eclipses our ability to kind of keep up. That's just an illusion. I think there's just so many of us that are just trying to figure out, what's my purpose for being here? What is the gift I'm meant to bring? And how do I navigate this in the midst of this crazy world, the chaos that we've created? And then all these things that are happening, like addiction and alcoholism and so on and so forth, which I think are massive red flags of the craziness that we have created. And so I think that's what the journey is.
Yes, absolutely.
So would you frame things now in terms of part of your journey is loving yourself through your own journey?
Yes. One thing my therapist said to me is, you are enough right now. You are worthy right now. I think that throughout this whole process, everything internally, frankly, was just torn apart. If someone were to literally look at my insides during the time when he was at the height of his disease, it was like a bloody war had gone on in there. It was awful. And recovering, frankly, the word recover, recovering from that, and then being able to look at myself in the mirror and realize all that my family had been through, myself included, I look different now. There's a lot more wrinkles up here. And sure. All over here. But feeling like I'm enough now and I'm worthy right now, not when I lose 20 pounds, not when our marriage is great because we're in Hawaii, or not because we've hit the year 25 of our anniversary, right now. Like, I'm worthy and I'm enough right now is hugely important in loving myself again, because that is part of the work that I'm doing with my doctor, is looking at all my positive qualities, because you lose that when you are put down as often as I was on a daily basis.
And so has there been a forgiveness part for you with yourself?
You know what? I think I'm almost there. I think the interesting thing about, like, when I did the work with Bo Eason is he said, no one really cares when you're at the top of the mountain. He said, people care when you're climbing the mountain because they want to know how you're getting there. When you just sit at the top of the mountain and say, look what I did, I'm all done now, it's not as interesting. No. But if you're willing to let people see what you've experienced going up and down the mountain, that's a lot more powerful than just standing on top and saying, look at me. If I'm being authentic with you, which I feel like I have been, but I don't think quite yet. No, I think that I'm still in the process. I think that that's something that I've begun doing, but I don't think I'm there yet.
Being in the process of forgiving yourself, what's an insight into that that would help some of the people that will be listening to this to recognize it for themselves?
Sometimes looking in the mirror and thinking I'm not enough. I would be honest with you in saying that quite a few times during the day, I do look at myself and say, wow, you used to be more of this. Or wow, you used to do this. You're not coaching a class of 30 people, Jen, anymore. You're not coaching 5 classes a day, 60 classes a week. Why aren't you doing that? You used to do all these things. I think now that I've stopped being on the treadmill and put in the work to heal, that takes away the glamour. It's internal work and it's hard work. And it takes patience and it takes love for yourself. And I think loving yourself is one of the hardest things to do. It's very easy for me to love my children. And it's easy for me, frankly, to love Tucker. It's a lot harder for me to love myself because I see all the scars inside.
Do you see the scars healing?
Yes, because if I didn't see the scars healing, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. This is truly the first time that I've ever, ever openly discussed what my experience was. And this is, as you well know, with your experience, this is kind of like a glimpse. But if someone were to take a camera and see what you really lived through, an ambulance being at your house, the cops arriving, the words he said to your child, coming in when the alarm is on and he's been kicked out of the house and opening the house and the alarm going off and your two children are running into your room, trauma, it's still there, but it's healing.
So I'm imagining that today will be a breakout moment for you.
Right now is a huge moment for me. And I have you to thank for it because, like I said, a lot of people for many years, when I'd be exercising, she looks really angry. She's kicking the crap out of that boxing, you know, glove or whatever it was. And why is she so aggressive? And I would be like screaming inside because my husband's an alcoholic and there's trauma and there's emotional and mental abuse. And there's all of these things. And you just want to shout it. You want to vomit all over people and you cannot, you just don't. That's just not the way it goes.
So I'm just imagining internally what that looks like to internally hold the trauma and how it's just wreaking havoc internally and being trapped in your body, in your mind, in your spirit, and almost like shut down.
I was a machine. I basically had hollowed out everything and I had put on this armor and I was a machine. And I basically exercised my frustrations and anger. I went there, like I said, sometimes twice a day, 2 hours each time. I looked great. I looked as fit as I could possibly look. But my, like I said, my brother said, you cannot keep this up. What are you going to do on the day when your body says no more and it shuts down? And I was like, that's not going to happen to me. That happened to me. Yeah. And the weight came on and I started to look more like a 43-year-old than I did a 28-year-old. And then I had to like accept myself, like I am human. Like I'm not that Superman and my Superman armor's off and now I'm Clark Kent and I got my glasses on. Clark Kent isn't as hot as Superman. let's get that armor back on. But accepting myself really more as Clark Kent and loving myself for it. And also, to be honest with you, I watch a lot of Rocky movies, like Rocky 3, like when he's running. I think it's the beach scene that he's running and he tells Adrian that he's scared. All those things. I just watch all these cheesy movies just because I identify with someone who is going through, who's still in the trenches. Still in the trenches. And I'm going to say, I don't think I'm out of the trenches. I think I'm climbing out, but I'm not out.
Yeah. Do you have a sense about what's the next hand up out of the trenches? Yes.
I genuinely want to start giving back because when I said to my therapist, what my thought was moving into this field, she said, well, are you healed enough yet? And I said, well, I don't think anybody's really ever healed. I think that everybody always has bumps and bruises. And I said, I don't want to wait until I'm fully healed because I may not be till 75 or 80. So for me, it's the light is, like I said, I've always mentored people. When I was in college, I mentored college students. And then I was a teacher for many years and taught third grade. And then I was a studio coach for 5 years. I've always had that in me. But my body is too tired to be that physical studio coach. What am I going to do now? And then I realized God gave you this for a reason. He had this happen to you for a reason. And are you just going to be quiet? What about that woman or man or child who's on the floor of their bathroom crying, cold and naked, and you remember being there at that moment? Are you going to have the courage and are you going to have the fortitude and are you going to have the perseverance to get up and find a way to help them, whatever that looks like? And that's, I think, my new passage in life. I really do. How I'm going to get there, I have no idea.
Well, I mean, I do think that Voices in Courage gives you a community to be a part of and to create whatever that looks like for you that serves the best version of who you are and the emergence of this bright, beautiful, joyful, extraordinary woman that's coming out of the storm and the chaos and the trauma of what you've been through. And I do really personally, I very much believe that it's our journey always to serve.
Absolutely.
But we have to do it from a place of mostly wholeness.
Yes.
Understanding that we're still always on the journey.
Exactly.
We never arrive.
100%.
Yeah. Bo Easton obviously was very instrumental for you. Has there been a book or something that you can point people towards that you would say that really helped me understand this?
Yes. You know, I wish I had it in front of me. It's a 3-part series. It's the Al-Anon series of books. Did you read those? I don't have the title on me right now. And they're literally up on my iPad and I just was going through them. But there's a 3-part book and I read all of them. And each time I read, I said, that's me. And so when we get off of this, I can email you the name of it, but it's a 3-part series. And I, without question, recommend that. I also, for people who are looking for faith-based things, Jesus Calling, I would say is my number one book that I go to because it's a daily saying and it just speaks to me every morning. And it starts my day off in faith and in hope. And when I don't read it, I can tell my day's off just a little bit. Those would be the main ones. Also, the 4 love languages. I'm not sure if you've read that, but my husband.
Five.
Thank you. Sorry. My husband read that while he was in therapy at a rehab facility. He said, read this. And as a wife of an alcoholic, we realized like, that's how you express your love. Well, I express it this way. It's a completely different. I do it through acts of kindness and you do it through your words. So because you're starting a new marriage, they told me you have to learn a new dance. So figuring out how each other work and how we communicate, I would say is huge, especially for people if it's a spousal situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Communication is such a huge thing, but we have to understand ourselves first. I mean, who are we really? And understanding, I think for me, one of the things that was illuminating was just understanding that I only have these windows that I've created out of the world that I've lived in. There are so many more windows and so many more doors and so many more ways of looking at life and the paradigms that can shift in a heartbeat. And so just understanding that we can shift, we can grow, we can learn, we can change our story, we can evolve and create a new story and a new life. And
it's exciting.
Very exciting.
Yes.
Very exciting. So it's the world that I live in and day out. Is the story that we're telling ourselves serving us or not? And if it's not, who's responsible for changing that story?
I love that. That's so true.
Any other kind of words of wisdom that you'd kind of like to end with?
I think the big thing I would say is self-care. I think that a long period of time where I just wasn't taking care of myself, it was the children, or it's Tucker, children, Tucker. And the depletion of my battery was so significant. The importance of sleep was a huge one for me, for example. But my therapist gave me this worksheet called GRAPES, G-R-A-P-E-S. Are you familiar with that? So the G is gentle with yourself. So every day you need to do one of these things. So gentle with yourself. It could be reading a Bible passage, it could be Jesus calling, it could be taking a bath. R is relax. So that could be very similar, meditation, taking a bath, something like that, sit on the beach. A is accomplish something. What I found with A is that I was accomplishing 10 different things during the day. Like I was cleaning the floors, I was vacuuming, I was dusting, I was doing all these different things. I had 10 accomplishments. P, pleasure, I had none. I wasn't doing anything pleasurable. And that could be as simply as watching like a funny TV show that you like. So now I watch Mike and Molly all the time because I think they're fun. E was exercise. Like I place my pleasure in exercise. Exercise is different. So exercise a day. And then S, do something social. Like just simply text a friend. And so having grapes really helped me basically start from scratch and like develop a more balanced body and focus on self-care. Because for so long, I was so focused on everybody else. And so I think that that would be the number one thing is really take the time to do that.
Absolutely. I talk about it in terms of you have to put your oxygen mask on first.
Right.
And that self-care is non-negotiable.
And I wasn't doing that for a long time. And it really makes a difference.
A huge difference. So congratulations.
Thank you. I'm enjoying it actually. Just started a long time ago, man. I was missing out.
So I'm just going to open it up. Also, is there anything you want to ask me?
So how did you get started with Voices and Courage in terms of deciding to make it a platform, like having it go live? And what does it entail? Like specifically, what are you looking to do with it?
I'm looking to have it be a place where people can feel safe and vulnerable and come to either through conversations like this. I have a 5 strategy document that I work with, and self-care is part of that strategy. It's the lessons that I've learned along the way and the journey that I'm on and the mindset. And so it's really to create a community.
Great.
For loved ones where I feel like the emphasis has not been for us. And part of it too is I work with executives all day long. Well, all of them are human beings first. And almost all of them have going on in their lives. So how do you continue to be successful professionally while you have all this stuff going on in your personal life too? And I'm a big proponent in there is no separation between work and personal. A human being walks into work first, not a job title. And so the short version is this is a community where people can feel safe. And it's the community that is for the spouses, the sons and daughters, the moms and dads, the people that are on the periphery of the disease.
That's great. So it's going to be more of an online thing, an online platform?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to do YouTube, podcasts, PDFs, training, coaching, and everything that you can really think of that will help people take a hold of where they are today, reimagine themselves tomorrow, and then help them create the path towards that realization.
And what education? Because I'm trying to decide. I graduated Boston College with an undergraduate in English and a minor in business and education. And when I was talking with my doctor, there's so many different paths you can take with regard to additional education. Have you done additional classes, courses? Is there like avenue that you suggest that you've gone down that you found successful? Or is it more, you're doing more your own personal mentoring kind of stuff from your experience? Because I know there's two different ways you can go about it.
I will say I got a master's degree in counseling a long time ago.
Okay.
So that certainly has helped. But in this day and age, there are so many things available outside of the traditional way of learning. There's so many people that are available. I mean, I did Tony Robbins in the 90s. I still am a very big Tony Robbins fan. Dean Graziosi, Brenda Burchard, Brene Brown,
yeah.
Mel Robbins. So I'm in that tribe, so to speak, where I'm learning on a regular basis. But I have put together the things that have served me the most in a way to kind of help people learn how to navigate. And so it's my journey with all these different resources, right, books and movies and other people that are operating out there, that I've picked the things that have worked for me. And I think that's one of the things to understand is that I read one particular book that actually was geared towards parents of adult children that are dealing with alcoholism or addiction. I'd say 80% of the book completely resonated with me. The other 20%, not so much. And so it's learning to take what resonates, right, let the rest go. And so I think that's true for everybody.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
I've done the same thing where I did the Bo Easton and then I did his workshops and then I did the mastermind for a year. Are you familiar with Todd Durkin at all? He's an intern for him and he's someone who's, how do you pronounce it? Burchard?
Burchard.
So he's moving into that realm, but I worked with him and I tell you, the speakers that when you go to these things, it's important to have degrees, but I think the people who've actually lived the moment and the experiences are the people that I gravitate to and I learn the most from because I can relate to them the most. That's why I think that this platform that you're putting together, I think is just a really important platform because it's approachable. And that's the most important thing with the situation, the people who are in this family is the site, is the organization approachable where you feel comfortable to say what's happened to you and seek help and be a part of something. Within 5 minutes of talking to you, I felt I can tell her whatever she wants to know. So I think that, so kudos to you. So thank you for that.
Thank you for that. Absolutely. And I appreciate the feedback too. And yes, I think we all need a safe place. And I'm at the point now where I don't think about going back and getting a degree. I think about this is life led and I have a great sphere of people that I surround myself with and the people that I learn from. I'm very cognizant of the fact that when I pick them and I choose them super wisely, because when I choose them, I'm choosing their tribe. And I want to make sure that that tribe is a really good fit for me. I learn more from the people like you talked about that have been in the trenches, but have done the work and are on the journey and are willing to share their experiences, the things that worked and the things that didn't work. And what's the next step that they're taking? What's the next thing that they most want to learn? And I think there's just a lot of richness in that sharing amongst all of us.
Absolutely. Not only do you have just the family that you're talking about and the spouse, but also moving for the extension, like the children, just because like Tucker and I each had to work on ourselves separately. That took years. Then we had to do the marriage. That's taken over a year. And then now it's like the children are seeing, oh, mom and dad are flirting again. Oh, mom and dad are teasing each other again. And they're like, ew, gross. But you can tell like that they're excited that they see that. And so there's a healing amongst the family dynamic. And so when you start to heal the person, then you can start to heal the marriage. Then you can start to heal the family. And so it just continues forward. So there's just so much important work that you're doing. And so congratulations.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yeah. So I hate to wrap this up, but I want to be respectful of time. And I do hope that we're able to have another conversation.
Absolutely.
And partly because I think that what you're up to at this point and where your passions are driving you, that this may be a great combination for you. Because we're in the creation process with this at this point. And I don't know. I only know what I know right now. Right. And I have an idea kind of, sort of what's going to happen in the next year. But I do have this sense that once this fire is lit, it's going to go whoosh.
It's going to start to trickle down.
Yes, I absolutely believe that.
And to 4 to 6 to 8, it's gonna, that's how I feel like it's gonna go for you.
Yes.
Yeah. I would love to speak with you again.
Fantastic. I do think that there's more of us. And because you have stepped into this space with me, who knows what's the next piece on your journey, my journey, and our collective potential journey. So
absolutely. I look forward to talking with you again, whether it's on a particular topic, because as you know, self-care is one thing. And then you talked about stopping and making a turn and a change, and you put a chapter hold in that. There's so many different things and pieces that you can talk about that are topics for a night whenever you have something going on that I'd love to contribute. If you ever need an additional resource or whatever, or want to just let me know what you guys are up to, I would love to just honestly be a part of helping. Really, honestly, that's my genuine desire moving forward. Nothing more than that is just to start, just to be a help.
Awesome. Well, and so how has this been for you?
This is great. Before we started talking, I said, should I write stuff down? I said, nope, just like you. This is the first time for me. And I just said, just be who I am. Just felt like it was a conversation, really.
Great. And so has the Zoom thing been okay?
Wonderful.
Okay, awesome. Great. Yeah. Okay. So before we close, I'm just going to like throw this in a little Jen bucket.
Okay.
Because I think there are many more of these kinds of conversations to take place. And it's quite possible that you could be doing some of these conversations.
Great. Would love to. Absolutely. So
there's a lot of possibilities here. And I'm going to kind of close with that and let you think about it. And we will connect again for sure. What I also want to be really clear about is that there's no judgment on my part relative to Tucker. I know this journey really well. I don't judge my son. I don't begin to know what the purpose of his journey is, except for I really do believe that on some level in the future, whenever, it is meant to serve.
Absolutely. And that's the other piece where you said you don't judge, and I don't judge him either. And the fact that you don't judge your son, that's a huge part of the healing process. That took a long time for me. So I appreciate you saying that, because I know he will too. He said, I'm not sure I'm ready to do this. I said, you know that you are. And but this is a big deal. Actually, this is a big deal for him and for me and for our marriage. So thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I'm thrilled for both of you at this point and know that there's just so much more to come. And I'm very honored and privileged to be on this journey with you.
Thank you. Myself as well. It was so nice meeting you. Everything that we said about you is more than true. So great to meet you. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll be in touch.
Sounds good. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Addiction never affects just the addict. It affects all of us. Recovering from addiction and alcoholism is also a life-changing battle for families dealing with a loved one's addiction. Numerous programs support addicts as they reclaim their lives, while their families face their own challenges without the same guidance. You're listening to Voices in Courage with K.L. Wells, where we transform the lives of the families and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics from surviving to thriving in the midst of chaos. Tune in as we highlight vulnerable stories of families who have addicted relatives and friends and learn how they have dealt with the challenges of isolation, desperation, and shame. If you are seeking ways to live your best life, then we welcome you into this safe space. Be a part of change today with your host, K.L. Wells.